This is episode number 161 with Fan Merrill. Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. Welcome everyone to this very special episode with my dear friend, Mr. Than Merrill, who is not only a stud on the football field, but also a stud in the boardroom. And quick note about Than, he is one of the foremost real estate investors and educators in the country, a nationally recognized expert in real estate investing, real estate education, and entrepreneurship, and a sought-after speaker who's shared the stage with speakers like former Lady Laura Bush, Tony Robbins, Sarah Palin, Donald Trump, Robert Kiyosaki, and the list goes on. Than is one of the coolest dudes you'll ever meet. And I met him a number of years ago through social media, really, where he was helping me and my business partner at the time grow our business. And we were helping him with some LinkedIn and social media stuff to help him grow his business. Now, Than is a former NFL football player turned mega successful entrepreneur, business owner, and has an incredible story, journey, but also he's just so cool and down to earth and, in my mind, egoless. He is very competitive, but he's so warm and open. He's all about team. He's all about we. He's not about me, which is really cool to see and at how successful he is while living that type of lifestyle and that type of philosophy. We talk a lot about the keys of success from what he's done to translate his playing day success coming from Yale and then going to the NFL and then translating those key disciplines into being a first-time entrepreneur, business owner, and building it into the mega business that he has today. It's incredible what he's doing. Everywhere I travel, I hear his commercials on the radio, and he's just blowing up in business. And I feel like he's one of the guys who's doing it the right way, and he's really serving a lot of people along the way. So without further ado, guys, I want to dive into this because we've got a lot of great content. This is one of my favorite ones just because we got to hang out in his house in San Diego and kind of do this in one of his rooms in his house. I hope you guys enjoyed this relaxed feel, the conversation, but really, I like to dive in deep every time. So I know you guys are going to get a lot of good golden nuggets out of this one with the one, the only, Than Merrill.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.
Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. Very excited today. Got my man Than Merrill in his house in San Diego on the podcast. What's up, brother?
Doing great. We're sitting here in the spare bedroom talking into two microphones. Awesome, though. I'm really excited to be with you today and share some insights.
Yeah, man. When did we meet? Like 5 years ago, maybe?
Yeah. We met through a friend of ours, mutual friend of ours, and you've spoken at a couple of our events over the years and done a great job presenting and teaching. So yeah, that's how we kicked it off. Then you joined our flag football team, and we really formed a deep relationship at that point. So,
and we played ping pong, and we're still like even right now. Yeah. We need to play a rubber match soon.
If you ask Lewis who won, it's Lewis. But if you ask me who won, well, I'll probably say it myself. So we're not sure.
You've got a serious setup ping pong table with what's it called, like the Robo Pong or something?
So it's a robotic arm that shoots ping pong balls at you. And so I figured if I got a table, and at the time I wasn't very good, so I figured, well, if I want to get good and I don't have anybody to play with, I got to get this robotic arm that just fires balls at me. So
it goes so fast. I have a video of you somewhere of like just rapid fire hitting it back.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A lot of good times. And the reason I wanted to bring you on, Dan, is because you've built this incredible business. And I don't know how much you're actually allowed to talk about, but you've got, how many employees do you have right now?
Close to 300, of course. 300. Across a couple different businesses. Yeah.
Wow. And you do mostly real estate investing education.
Yeah. So we do kind of we have a real estate development company, which has been my core business for the past 11 years. And we also have a real estate brokerage. So we have we do the traditional side as well with real estate agents. And
right.
So we both do the investment side. We also have a lending company. So we do a lot of lending across the country. And then we have fortunebuilders.com, which is our real estate educational company, where we teach people what we've done in our development company over the past 11 years.
Right. And because there's so many people that want to get into real estate as another form of income and building a side business or make it full-time for themselves all around the country, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, a lot of our clientele is everyone from a casual investor who wants to pick up a couple passive income rental properties to people that want to build an office and do, you know, 50, 60, 70 deals a year. So you have a wide variety of different people that want to utilize real estate either part-time or full-time to increase their income and really just create a better lifestyle for themselves.
And, you know, it's been fascinating. You know, 5 years ago when we first connected, you were already crushing it. And you've been doing business for about 10 years now, I believe. But before that, you were playing in the NFL, right? And you went to Yale.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got drafted. Did you get drafted? Or
I did. I snuck in the last round.
Really? Yeah. You went seventh round?
Snuck in.
Wow.
Seventh round, yeah.
You weren't Mr. Irrelevant.
They must have been recruiting somebody else, and somehow they found me, but...
And you went to the Bears for 2 years, correct?
Yeah, I was with, I got drafted by the Buccaneers, and then I played with the Bears, and I loved it. Loved every minute of it. Didn't last long in the NFL, but I really enjoyed my experience there.
And why didn't you last long? Was it injury-based?
I did get injured, but then when I came back, I got cut after I was injured. So the reality is, you know,
machines.
It's a short career, but learned a lot of valuable lessons from it, for sure.
Do you... looking back, do you wish you could stay in there longer? Do you wish you would have had like a 10-year run if you could have stayed healthy?
I would absolutely say, you know, I would have loved to have 5, 6, 7 years. That was my goal starting out, but didn't work out that way. But I think it definitely prepared me for what I do now. I think there's a lot of lessons that you take away from athletics that you can apply to business. And so it's something that I will always miss and always appreciate and realize that a lot of the lessons I've learned over the year, I'm very thankful for that opportunity.
What would you say are some of the biggest lessons that translated directly from sports in general, but maybe the NFL, into what you're doing now, that you would say if you did not have those principles or that foundation or those lessons really understood, that you probably wouldn't be as successful as you are now?
You know, the one thing about the NFL is the discipline. I really didn't understand discipline until I got to that level. And I realized if you want to stick around in that business, every day you have to wake up and you have to study. You have to focus on your body. You have to focus on the way you eat. You have to. And so it really instilled in me a great discipline. I look at, you know, the military, for example, and a lot of very successful business owners, you know, come from a military background, or they come from some sort of background where you've learned to be disciplined at that level. And so, you know, I approach my life the same way every day now is, hey, in the NFL, you're not there the next day if you're not on time, if you're not doing what you say, if you're not following orders. And so
you're cut.
Yeah, you are. And so although it is a very ruthless life's business and it doesn't last long, it teaches you a lot of very valuable lessons, because in business, you know, there's always competitors. Things are always changing. You're always adapting and you're having to deal with loss. You know, as an athlete, you deal with losses. You deal with getting beat. You have to learn to deal with that and come back the next day or come back the next play and really adapt. And so I think it's very applicable to what we do.
What do you think, what's another lesson that maybe a lot of entrepreneurs don't have? The entrepreneurs that fail, they don't have these certain attributes that you've learned. What's another lesson besides being committed and consistent every day, waking up and doing the work was number one. A lot of people just want to start making money or building a business on the side, let alone getting to the level you have with 300 employees. What's something else that they miss out on that you really learned?
I think one of the most important things I learned very early on was to build a systems dependent business. And
what do you mean by that?
You know, when I started with my real estate investing business, every time I did something new within that business, I would document it. And then I would say, okay, I don't want to do that activity again. How can I replace myself? And so a lot of entrepreneurs start out and their business is them. If you take them out of the business, there's no income that's produced, right? Most small businesses out there have a few employees and the main person driving the business is literally working in it day in and day out. And so,
and they have it all in their head.
They have it all in their head. The intellectual capital is all in their head. So it's a very difficult business to sell because if you are your business, what are they buying? You know, what you need to develop and what I always share with other entrepreneurs and, you know, everything that you do, think about how can I do this 1 to 10 times myself and then create a process to plug somebody else in that wants an opportunity. So it might be an employee. It might be you develop a technology that helps you do that process more efficiently. Yeah. So it's all about how you use your time. And so from, you know, the very first time I did a direct mail campaign, I was licking and sticking envelopes trying to generate leads. And I realized, okay, I don't need to do that again. I know how long it takes, how much it costs. I'm going to plug somebody else in to replace myself. And then I'm going to work on another marketing and lead gen campaign. I'm going to figure that out. If it's, you know, making if you're calling clients, you know, we did a lot of for sale by owner prospecting very early on. And I realized, wait a second, it's just a process. You got to ask these questions. You got to gather this information. So I created a script and we hired someone to do acquisitions and I replaced myself. So
you're doing it first to learn it, that process. Then you created the process, wrote it down or recorded it on video, and then said, okay, now you train someone else to do it.
Exactly.
Where did you learn that from?
You know, there's a great book called The E-Myth, which I'm sure a lot of you have probably heard of or read over the years, and kind of talks about the philosophy. And I've read a lot of a lot of books on selling companies. You know, how do you actually sell a company? So I said, if that's, you know, the end goal, let's say 30 years from now or 10 years from now of selling a company, what does it actually take to sell a company? What do they buy? Well, they buy systems, processes, and then they buy a management team.
Yeah.
And so I said, that's what you have to do is you have to first, you are your management team. You have to build systems, processes. And then once you're to that level where you're producing enough income, then you start hiring and you start hiring management staff to replace yourself in different areas. And so every business that we've had, we've taken that same approach and it's worked very well. And so you basically go from being a technician working in the business to a manager to a true entrepreneur running the business. And so it's kind of like, I call it the three levels. You graduate up the chart as you go.
What do you think are some of the biggest mistakes entrepreneurs make right now? Who are trying to scale?
I think the biggest mistake is thinking that somebody can't do it as well as you. And it's interesting because initially when you hire somebody, you're right. But eventually, especially if they're more focused in their activities, as an entrepreneur, you might be doing accounting one day, you might be doing sales the next day, you might be designing something from a marketing standpoint the next. And
cleaning the bathroom.
Yeah, you're literally doing everything. And so if you bring somebody in to just work on one aspect, let's say it's marketing, eventually after a few months, if you hire the right person, they're going to do it better than you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have a fear of either A, someone doing it better. You know, there's a lot of people in my company that do things that are a lot better than I do. And it's just a matter of assembling the right people on the bus at the right time.
And the thing is, you know, maybe if you were going head to head and you were only focusing on that one thing like sales, then maybe you could be better than that person. But if you want to really scale it, right, you need to put people in place who are just as good, if not better, or almost as good as you would do it you know, at your top game. Because you could probably be the best at everything you decided you wanted to do in your business.
Sure.
If you put the time and the energy to focus just on that every day.
Yeah.
But you don't want to do that.
You're right. I feel like I have, in my business, a really good understanding of every department. I know there's a lot of people in every department that work in my office that know things at a higher level than I do. In fact, are more skilled in that department. But I have a good understanding of just how all the pieces come together. And then really just the person driving the business has to have the vision for where they want it to go. And then you find the people to come in who can really buy into that vision and then do a lot of the day-to-day work.
Right. What's your personal vision and what's the end game for this business?
Yeah, you know, number one is right now I'm having fun working with our team and our clients and our I love what I do. I work with some of my closest friends that I grew up with.
Yeah.
So the end game is just to continue to grow our business, to deliver value to our clients and you know, make it more enjoyable for them, make the experience better. So I don't have like a 2-year plan or a 3-year plan.
Are you trying to sell it or?
No, not right now.
You want to have the systems in place and be able to scale it so that you could sell it if you want to.
I, you know, one of my goals is I have a young son and I want to coach him when he, you know, if he chooses to play football.
Like, it looks like he will though. He had a firm grip, man. He caught my hand and he was like gripping that thing.
Yeah, he's a great kid. And so one of my goals is to scale back on the number of hours. But I love what I do. I love, you know, the people I work with, but, you know, I've always wanted to coach football actually, but on my own terms, and my own terms means I'm not having to fly, you know, from college to college to college or high school to another job. You know, coaching is a rough life for a lot of people, but I think it's a great way to give back to people and kids. And it was a big part of my life. So ultimately down the road, I'll transition into that a little bit more, but we'll still have the business for sure.
And you mostly work from home. Is that right?
I do. My office is right down the street.
Blocks away.
Yeah. A couple blocks away.
How do you structure that and set it up a good, I guess, environment for your employees to feel comfortable that you're at home working from home? Obviously, I know how hard you work and you're probably the hardest worker there because you're constantly executing. But how does someone, if they want to work from home and they have 300 employees and the employees never see the boss, let's say, or the CEO or the leader, how do you structure an environment so that they feel empowered, inspired, and not like you're just off at home, you know, riding on their, you know, their efforts and just taking money and or whatever, you know, what they would think.
Yeah, it's a great question. Number one is I'm definitely present every day at the office. So I have multiple meetings a day where I'll go to the office. So a lot of times, you know, I might go to the office twice a day to have a meeting. I found it's a good balance to work from home and be at the office because when you work at the office, sometimes people become dependent on you making decisions. And you want your team members who work in your office to be empowered and to think like business owners, to think like, I call it an intrapreneur. You know, they're entrepreneurs within a business and they may be starting a new division of the business, a new income stream. But in order to do that, they have to be very skilled at making decisions. And the only way to really learn to be a good decision maker is to make those decisions. So a lot of times when the entrepreneur is too present, everyone within the office is dependent on their skills as a decision maker. And it's not that I say I have a better skills. I've just made more decisions over the number of years. So it can be very easy where someone becomes dependent. So being at home has actually empowered our employees to make decisions, has empowered them. At the same time, I'm definitely present. People see my face. You can't be absent, right? There has to be a balance between the two. But it works well for me because at home I can focus and I'm not getting, you know, people knocking on my door like when I used to work in, because I did work in the office for years.
And they just come and ask you questions all the time.
Yeah. And that was holding them back and holding us back. And so I realized if they want to get better, they want to be empowered, they want to make better decisions, and it's forced them to do that. And now they're much better at what they do, and they create more opportunity for themselves too.
Sometimes I hear people, they say, who have like a small business, maybe a few employees, they feel like they're making so many decisions throughout the day that they have zero energy at night. Yeah. Because I don't know if it's decision fatigue or whatever, where they're constantly making decisions. And at the end of the night in their personal life, they're like, I have no clue. You just make a decision with their, like, their spouse or whatever, right? Like, I don't know what I want to eat. Just make a decision.
Yeah.
How do you manage all the decisions you make? And how would you recommend an entrepreneur managing that?
You know, that's
so they have energy.
It's a really good, insightful question. I absolutely for years had decision fatigue. And it wasn't until I started empowering our team members to make decisions without me. And even when I knew sometimes, as long as it wasn't a major decision that was going to cost the company, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, if it was a decision that might cost a couple thousand or even a couple hundred dollars, I would let them make the decision, even if I knew it was wrong.
Really?
The only time they would learn is when they've made a mistake and they've owned the mistake because it was their decision. And so it's definitely a growing process. And you find that with a lot of entrepreneurs, they're afraid to let smart team members make decisions. If you hire right, they're going to learn the business. They're going to be, they're going to want to make decisions. They're going to want to grow. And so that I don't think there's any way to solve decision fatigue that I know. Maybe there's some mental hypnosis tricks or sure. meditation, but for me, it was empowering our managers underneath within our organization. As soon as we did that, wow, what a difference in the day-to-day lifestyle.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.
And speaking of hiring the right people, I hear it all the time from people saying there are no good people out there to hire. Or, you know, I hire someone and invest all this time and energy in training them, and then they leave in 6 months and it doesn't work out. And yeah. I repeat that cycle. How have you, first, what's your turnover rate like? Do people stay for a long periods of times in your company? And then how do you find key people? How do you know when they're the right person or not? And how do you keep them inspired to stay along for a long time in your company?
Yeah. First thing I'd recommend is a great source, resources. There's a great book called Top Grading. It's written by Brad Smart. It's literally, you think your textbooks in college are thick. This one's thick. I mean,
I probably won't read it. I'll have someone else read it for me.
But it's a great book because it talks about how to find A level talent, hires. And it talks about a hiring process. And so, for example, when you interview at our company, we have a 4-hour hiring process that you go through. I mean, whereas before we developed this process, when we were just starting out, it might be half an hour and we'd be chit chatting in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
And that was how I was making
just
decisions.
Just go off a feeling.
Like, yeah. I was going off a feeling, and my gut was wrong. I wouldn't say the majority of the time, a lot of the time. And so it was costly. You would have someone turn over and you'd have to replace them or, once we put this process into place, it upgraded the talent of individual who was working at our office. And And
what's the process? Can you share?
Yeah, you know, the top grading process is really an extensive application, and then it's divided into two-hour interviews. So you sit down and you look at their work history, and then you look at their competencies, which is divided into different categories. There's like 13 different competencies we look for, everything from ethics and integrity to communication skills, to organization skills, to managerial skills. And so we ask very detailed questions in a very set order. And then we give them real business problems that we've had. Almost like if you've ever interviewed for a consultant job, at a consultant, sure. You know, if
high-level stuff.
Like, high-level stuff. Yeah, they're going to give you real business problems that you've encountered just to see how you think. And so that's how we conduct our interview process. And it's been very good because we get people to really respect the opportunity that they're given. And when they come in, sure, and they respect, you know, this is a bad analogy because interviewing at our company has nothing to do with, you know, the military, but when you're, you know, a Navy SEAL, why do they buy into the process so much? And I'm not a Navy SEAL, so I shouldn't be speaking on their behalf, but, you know, they go through Hell Week together. Rigorous training where they earn a position and they now are a brotherhood. Right. And if you can implement a good interview process, people really respect you as a company, as an owner of the business more.
Right.
And so they come in with a totally different mindset.
Gotcha. That's interesting. How important is it to focus on your body and your health in order to run a successful business? I know there's a lot of out of shape and overweight people who have businesses, but it seems like they're miserable or they're missing the point of living a good life. So how important is health for you and your employees? And what do you do to maintain, you know, an elite athlete type of lifestyle while running a business?
I think it's vitally important that you as the business owner embrace a healthy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I think, first of all, if you know, your diet and nutrition, I mean, energy levels differ greatly. If you're not eating well, you'll probably be 2/3 as productive as you could be just by changing your diet. And as far as working out, you know, I work out 6 days a week. So I go, and I prefer CrossFit because they're very short, 30-minute workouts most of the time. So most of the time when I work out 4 days a week, I'm doing that. 2 days I'll do just a run because it's all I could get in that day.
Down to the beach?
Yeah. If I'm local, right down to the beach, or if I'm traveling or wherever, then I'll try to get in some sort of a physical activity because it's very important. It's also important, I think, as a leader of your company, if you embrace that lifestyle, your team members and employees will do the same thing. And they'll follow suit.
And they'll be more productive.
Absolutely. And it's a cult, you know, you create a culture, and the culture really, the founder and the CEO, CFO, you know, the heads of whoever created the organization, whoever the founders are, create the culture. And so that's something we've tried to do, you know, once a quarter we get together, our company, and we do what we call an Inspire event. So everybody in the company gets together. If people work virtually, we'll have somebody come in and just share for, you know, 90 minutes to 3 hours, depending on the topic. And in January, we had somebody come in and talk about nutrition and different types of, so the whole company's on a water, a salad, a no sugar, a no bread challenge. I can't say the whole company, but the majority of
people sign up for it.
Yeah. And so things like that.
Are you doing that right now?
Yeah. So I'm on the no bread. No sugar is next week. No sugar is next week.
No gluten or bread, or is it just
it's
bread?
Just no bread. It's
one thing at a time.
It's a simple challenge, right? It's actually a really good idea by one of the team members who works with us. He started off with, you know, a water challenge because everyone can have success drinking a certain amount of water each day. And then you kind of progress up to the salad challenge. I think it all starts with whoever's running the company. I think that's important. And so, you know, one of the local gyms, there's probably 40, 50 individuals at our company that all go to the same gym.
The CrossFit gym?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So it's,
That's cool.
Yeah, it's
how many are local? How many employees local?
Probably about 120.
Wow, man, you guys have grown a lot. So, I think a couple of years ago, you only had like 30 or 40.
Yeah, it was just a couple of us in the office stacked up on top of each other.
Did you guys take another floor now or something?
We have a couple buildings all right around here. Yeah. A
couple buildings, so it's not just the one down the street.
Yeah, where we live is right near the beach, so there's not a lot of office space. So we picked up a couple office buildings that are right across the street from each other. So,
what are some of the other rituals besides working out? Like, what's your morning look like, both physically, you know, going through the motions, but also the mental preparation you have for each day?
Yeah. Well, one thing, now that I'm married and have a young son, I definitely had to transition some of my hours to morning time before they woke up, because I do work from the house. So one of the things that I like to do right off the bat is every morning I walk down to my office, and for about 5 minutes, I just organize my day and I prioritize my day. And I think a lot of people don't do this, and it's so small, but sometimes the most productive things are simple. And so I look at, you know, the 15 activities that I have to do for that day, and I put them in order, and I say, okay, what's the hardest one that I've been putting off? I'm going to get that one done first. And then I just prioritize my time and I time it. So I put down, okay, I'm going to spend 15 minutes on this. I'm going to spend an hour on this. And I'm not going to spend more time, because a lot of times we end up spending 3 hours when we were supposed to write. Maybe we're designing a presentation that we're going to give to whoever.
And we spend forever on it.
Yeah. So you spend so
you
4 hours. So
you give yourself a limit.
Yeah. I give myself a limit.
And you put a time measurement against each one of these priorities first.
Yeah.
Really?
So I always say done is better than perfect.
Of course.
Because you can.
Good and done is better than perfect and never done.
Yeah. Because that's the way I've always been, because there's always going to be things that interrupt your day, you know, as a business owner. And so I always, you know, make sure there's a little bit of time allocated for that, and then just put a limit on how long I'm going to work on that. And so I actually plan out the however long I'm spending working that day into those blocks. And it's been very effective for me, because keeps me on track. And, you know, it also keeps a mind that can sometimes get really excited about, you know, I get very excited about new ideas and new things. It's helped me say no to a lot of opportunities that would have been more distraction than actually a good opportunity for the company.
Do you feel like you say no a lot?
A lot more. When I started out, I said yes
to everything.
And now it's transitioned to no to almost everything.
I'm pretty lucky I'm here, man. You said yes to me.
I said yes to you. You know, I knew you were going to come here, and I knew I had to refresh your memory about how many actual ping pong games you won. So,
hey, as long as we're even, that's better.
That's right. We are even. You got that mean forehand. I couldn't figure it out.
The spin, man.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out.
I'm sure you whoop me right now. I haven't played in a while. I'm always curious about the way people think, top performers, great athletes, and how they visualize the results they want to create. You know, for me, before every game, I would go on the field and actually like visualize myself catching the ball and seeing the ball come to the air, running through the plays, thinking about, you know, what happens if there's an interception, and going through every possibility. Do you visualize anything like in business right now like that? Do you think about, you know, here's the result I want to create? Is there a process to achieving those goals?
I think there definitely is. I think visualization is very important for the growth of your company. I can't say I'm the master of this. This is not, you know, I still study this to this day. I was big on visualization when I was an athlete. I visualize opportunities, and then I try to somehow study, is that a good opportunity or not? So I look at a lot of other businesses. I'm always studying other businesses, not just direct competitors of what we do, but I'm looking at other companies. How do they market? How do they lead gen? And then what it does is that curiosity really helps me visualize something new for our business. So I'll see a way a company does something. You know, maybe I'm studying Zappos or Google, and I'll have an opportunity where it helps me develop a vision. So I'm curious. I'm always asking questions. How does that company run? How does that company lead gen? How do they pay their customer service? How do they pay their salespeople? What is their commission bracket? So I'm very curious. And then once I have a basic understanding of something that works, I say, okay, well, how could I apply this to my business? And then I really start to visualize, okay, we need this person. And when we generate this much revenue, we can hire someone to manage that department. And so A lot of my original ideas come from other companies, right? And just like people listen to your podcast to get ideas for their business, it's no different, right? It helps them visualize what they should be doing, how they should be running their company. You know, I might say something about how we hire and they take that idea and run with it, right?
Exactly.
So same thing.
What would you say is your greatest asset that is better than everyone else in most businesses? Like your greatest asset that no one else has that you have?
Myself or the
yourself.
Company? I would say competitiveness. Mm. You know, one of the things
that's true.
I'm extremely competitive person, so I'm always pushing everyone within our company to be better.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite saying is, you know, don't tell me how we can't do something, or don't tell me how we don't have time for something.
Sure.
Tell me how we can do it. How can we get this done this week and be more strategic? So I really think, you know, if I had to say my competitiveness and my passion, I guess, would be, you know, I'm very passionate. I get very excited about ideas and I like to see them work. And that's something that I think inspires other people within the company.
Yeah. You talked about you want to be a football coach someday, and because it inspired you to become the man you are because of the coaches you had, as well as, you know, how important coaches were for me. Do you feel like it's important for every entrepreneur to have their own entrepreneur or business type of coach, or even just a moral compass coach throughout their entire journey? Or is that irrelevant in business?
Absolutely relevant. I think all throughout your career, you need coaches, and it's like I call it having a board of advisors. You know, there's people that have advised us over the years, and some of those people have started, you know, from day one. Some people have changed over the years, but I think if you look at any big company, the CEO, the top management, CFO, COO, CTO, they generally will have a board of advisors. They have 5 or 6 or 7 trusted individuals with different expertise, you know, accounting expertise, business management expertise, leadership, marketing. And so I think you have to find those contacts, trusted advisors who have done something great in their careers. A lot of times they might be later on in their career, and their way of giving back is through sharing. Right. And so I've always believed strongly, you know, when I started in real estate, I didn't know anything about the real estate development business. So I found coaches and mentors. When we started building an educational company, when we started lending money, I've said, who's great in this area that I could talk to, network with? And really it's, you know, it's kind of the mastermind effect, it's an even closer group. And so, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we were working with a consultant. We'll always, I said, never, the moment you think you know it all is the moment your business starts to decline, right? The moment you think your stuff doesn't stink anymore, right? That's when things start to decline. So I'm always open-minded, right? Listening to other consultants, because the reason I love consultants and I believe in consultants is a lot of times, even the answers they give you, you might have already known, but you might not have been focusing on them. Or just sitting down and having somebody else look at it helps you be more aware of what you're doing and not doing in a business. And then that outside perspective, it can't be replaced. I mean, it's so valuable.
That's a big asset for a leader or a CEO like yourself to just be open to saying, hey, I want to learn from everyone. It doesn't matter if you run a $10,000 a month business, like teach me something that you do that I could apply to my however many millions you have, you know, in your business.
Absolutely. I could sit here and pick your brain and you would tell me 100 things I didn't know about how to run our business, and we could probably go vice versa.
Sure.
You know,
but just being open-minded and receptive as opposed to saying, oh, I didn't know all this stuff.
Yeah.
That's a huge asset alone.
It's
you got to drop your ego.
You do. And that's not always easy to do, you know.
Wow.
Because you'll, it's like you might walk into a conference and you've been to a similar conference before, and the person's saying something, you know, and all of a sudden you start tuning them out. Well, 10 minutes later, they're saying something you don't know, and you've tuned them out and you're thinking about something else. You're checking your email and you missed, you know, valuable insights. So I think you can learn from people within your company. I think, they've all worked at other companies or had other careers or experiences. Sure. So just keep asking questions and keep being curious.
That's cool. Two questions here or two responses I'm looking for you. One is, who is the most influential coach in your sports career from 5 to 27 or whatever? And what was the biggest lesson you learned from them? And then who has been the most influential coach since then in your business career, and what's the biggest lesson you learned from that person?
You know, those are great questions. I would say, even though I only had a short time to play with him, Tony Dungy was one heck of a leader. And so even though I was only there a short time, from the moment I met him, he was such he really inspired me, because every coach until that time was, I wouldn't say a typical coach, but football coaches have a certain type of personality, of course, yeah. Right? And he was soft-spoken,
yeah.
You know, a very religious man, and he could control the entire room, being the entire team being soft-spoken, and not cursing, you know, like a lot of the coach,
like everyone else does.
Yeah, and he was a great man, because he let his position coaches coach at a high level, and so he was a great manager. Like if he was working in a Fortune 500 company, he'd be a tremendous CEO.
Wow.
Because people really, he didn't you know, there's a lot of coaches that, you know, they try to get involved in everyone else. He let his coaches coach. I mean, if you look at, man, there's so many head coaches who worked underneath him over the years, and just a tremendous leader, very detail oriented, and that's one thing that I definitely learned from him. So, yeah,
and
I think.
And then in the business side of things, who's the,
you know, interestingly
coach?
Enough, I'd have to give my number one entrepreneur would be, you know, my mother, actually, believe it or not. Would she ran a dancing school.
She coaches you?
She does. Sometimes I want coaching and sometimes I don't want coaching. But I learned a lot from her over the years. Just, I think a lot of the discipline that she had, she ran a dancing school. So tap, ballet, jazz, you know, things like this. And she had customers and she dealt with parents and kids. And and so I learned a lot from her over the years, just about every day, what it takes to wake up and work hard. You know, what does working hard look like? And what does staying focused look like? And so she still gives me advice over the years, although it gets hard to take sometimes. And my second coach I would add now is now my wife. My wife gives me a lot of perspective on what I'm doing wrong, because she can hear, you know, when I'm on the phone or if I'm, you know, being in situations overly competitive or too abrupt or
too focused on the numbers.
Yeah, or too exactly, you know, not hearing what people are trying to tell me. And so she gives me really good perspective. So those are probably the two most current, and I always bounce ideas off her constantly, you know, where she gives me really good feedback.
I like that.
Hopefully she's listening to this podcast.
She's a former, you know, was she Olympic hopeful, or she make the,
she played on professional beach volleyball for like 8 years and, played college basketball. So she's, and now she has a beach volleyball club that she coaches kids in different parts of the country.
Yeah. I want to ask a few more questions to wrap it up here. This is a question I started asking people about the three truths they know. So if if today was your last day, or it was the last day of your life in 50, 80 years, and you were able to leave three truths behind to your son, your family, the world about life, what would those three truths about life be?
I think it's a great question. I think if I were to pass on words of advice to my son and anybody, you know, listening to this podcast, I'd say number one is live with passion. And I think it's interesting, because people always say, you know, I'd say my second truth is do what you love, but I'd put my first truth above that, live with passion, because in life, you don't always have the blessing of doing exactly what you love. But if you live with passion and you find excitement in what you do, it changes your entire perspective. You might be working at a job right now, and there's probably ways that you could find to build more passion into what you do. And I think that's the number one thing I like to see in our company. I like to see people that are inspired about whatever it is that they're doing that day. They just read something, they just put something in motion, and seeing ideas work is something that gets me excited. And so I would tell my son, you know, live with passion. Second thing I would say is do what you love, or do as close to what you love as you can. It doesn't have to be, you know, exactly. You know, I would probably love coaching football more than I would love what I do right now, but it's pretty darn close. You know, it's still a lot of fun. I work with people that, you know, I enjoy real estate. I enjoy real estate development. I enjoy coaching and helping other entrepreneurs build real estate businesses. And so I would say it's a second, to probably my truest love of all, but I love it, beyond the benefit of a doubt. Right. Yeah. So, you know, that do something that you love or close to it, something you get enjoyment out of, whether that's work at a company, whether that's start your own business. It's just got to be in a field that inspires you.
Yeah.
And then I think the third thing is challenge yourself. If I were to say to my son or anybody for that matter, you know, when you get it, find ways to constantly challenge yourself. So I'm always coming up with things that challenge me on a weekly basis. All right, I'm going to run X number of miles this week, or I'm going to read, you know, every day this week. And so I'm trying to constantly coming up with challenges that create discipline. You know, I realize a lot of times myself and everybody included, we procrastinate or we lack discipline. So I constantly harp on that. And life's too short to not try to be good at what you do.
Yeah.
You know, so challenge yourself constantly.
I like that. And if there were three books that you could leave behind, what would those three books be that you leave behind your family and your friends that represent?
That is a good question. That is a
maybe,
good.
Maybe a couple, you know.
Can we throw in a couple magazines in there? Maybe.
No, you know. I didn't prep Thad before. Yeah. So.
Couple books. Well, I would. The E-Myth is a great book. I think that's a. If you're starting a business, it probably is going to have nothing to do with your specific field, but it has everything to do with building a company and building a systems dependent company. And that was really where the first idea popped into my head. Now that, you know, the book I can't say was enough to help propel a career, but it inspires an idea.
Yeah.
The Art of Happiness is a great book I would recommend to everybody to read. And, great book that I read years ago with my wife, and just something that I've always loved. And then, man, a third book, Lewis, you got Sports Illustrated. No, there's a lot of good. Tony Robbins has a great book, Awaken the Giant Within.
Yeah, that's great.
I've read that book twice. One of my fundamental books would be Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. Most people have probably read it that are listening to this.
Yeah.
I've read that book a couple times over my career. I've read a lot of books.
Have you read The Alchemist?
I don't believe I've read The Alchemist.
Oh, man, it's a game changer.
Is it? I'll have to look at it.
It's a quick read. Very cool. Okay, a couple questions left. What are you most grateful for recently?
Whew, what am I most grateful for? My son, by far. Yeah. Puts perspective on life. And it really gives you something to think about beyond just you and your wife and your friends and family. And it now becomes about building a legacy and, you know, making sure that it's just fun to watch somebody model, you know, kind of what you do, and you realize everything you say, both good and bad, he's going to take from it. So, definitely, you know, my son Tice is somebody who is, you know, a great blessing in our lives.
What's something about you that most people don't know that would shock them?
one thing, I have a hyperbaric chamber sitting right here in this room.
I didn't even see that. Some people,
I don't know if that's going to shock many people, but I believe strongly in health and wellness. And it's funny because years ago we got this hyperbaric chamber and most people don't know that you can actually sit in this thing and it makes you feel really good. You got to be disciplined to do it. Sometimes I have a couple
minutes, right?
Yeah, an hour at least.
An hour? Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it work?
It definitely works. We can put you right in there if you want. We could do the whole podcast lying in the hyperbaric chamber.
Maybe I'll take a photo in there and put it up on the show notes.
Yeah. I don't know if that's as interesting as what you're looking for, but since we're sitting in here next to the hyperbaric chamber.
It's all good. Cool. Well, before I ask the final question, I want to direct people where they can go to learn more about you. Where should they check out? Fortunebuilders.com, or is there?
Yeah.
I'll have everything linked up.
Yeah. Fortunebuilders.com is our main website. And if people are specifically looking for educational coaching when it comes to real estate investing, FortuneBuildersMastery.com is another website where you can find out even more information about our coaching. So, those are our two sites.
And are you still on Twitter and
I don't do much Instagram on Twitter anymore. I'm still on Facebook. Yeah. Right. So I've embraced Facebook. I'm still there. So you can find me
fan at, page there.
ThanMerrill.com. I got a personal page all there. Right. And then, yeah, so they can check me out there.
We'll have that plus all the books and the things linked up on the show notes. Before I ask the final question, I want to acknowledge you, Than, for so much that I've learned over the years. And I really want to acknowledge you for your willingness to serve others, because you've been of service to me in such a big way over the last 5 years without even knowing it, probably. When you've had a bigger company, you've been so giving and
appreciate that
open to, you know, coaching and mentoring and just being friends with everyone that I see you interact with. You're constantly being in service to them. And I think it's really cool to see someone who is a CEO, who's a leader, who's focusing outward and being in service to make other, to rise others upward. And so I want to acknowledge you for constantly living a great life and showing others that they can live a great life as well.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. And, you know, I had the same thing for you. I've learned a ton from you over the years, and I'm always, always interested in connecting with other folks. If you're listening to the podcast, you know, and you see me at a conference, definitely come introduce yourself to me, and maybe we get a ping pong game in there, or you two, you know.
Exactly. Or a beach volleyball game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Final question is, what's your definition of greatness?
Ooh, man, that's a good question. I'd say consistency in your actions and that match your beliefs. I think you have to have an internal, you know, moral and ethical compass that drives you. And I think your actions have to match that. And so I really like working and being around people that are consistent, that do what they say, that follow through. And it requires a certain level of discipline. It requires a certain level of, you know, it's not easy. You have to challenge yourself to always be consistent in your actions. So I'd say that, you know, if you look at a lot of great leaders, that probably would be a good definition that they live by. And so I think that'd be something good to leave with everyone out there.
Than Merrill, thanks for coming on, bro.
Thank you. It's awesome to sit here and, talking to two microphones in my spare bedroom. It's great, Lewis. You do a great job. And folks, I know if you're listening, definitely tune into Lewis's podcast. He puts a lot of time, energy, and heart into this for sure.
There you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please go back to the show notes at lewishouse.com/161. Leave a comment about the biggest thing you learned from this episode. We'll also have a question on that page right there. We want you to answer. So make sure to go to that page, lewishouse.com/161, and answer the question for the comment section in the blog. Also, make sure to check out Than. We'll have all of his links there. We can connect with him on social media and also his websites, and check out his business and kind of just see behind the scenes how he's doing it. Even if you're not really into real estate or real estate investing right now, you're going to want to follow this guy, because he is just a master at marketing. He's a master at building a business. He's a master at building a team and creating an incredible culture with that team. And there's not too many people I've seen do it at a level that he does it, with the intensity and the warmth and the care and the discipline that he does it with. So I hope you guys enjoyed this. Again, make sure to check out lewishouse.com/161. Check out all of Than Merrill's information and get connected with him. Also, make sure to subscribe to our free newsletter. If you want to be on Team Greatness and you want to get all the best information from behind the scenes, make sure to subscribe to the free newsletter over at lewishouse.com. You can opt in anywhere you see an opt-in form for that newsletter. And we're going to be sending you goodies every single week after you do. So I hope you guys enjoyed this one. Again, big thank you to Than Merrill for coming on. Love that guy. And I'm a big fan of his. Hope you got a lot out of it. You guys know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.